Welcome back. Haynes Johnson is our guest, known to many throughout the years for his work, both as a print journalist, for which he has a Pulitzer Prize, and as a television person, known for many years. Those of us who have watched Washington Week in Review in particular over the years, known lots of ways. And now the author of a very important book, The Age of Anxiety, McCarthyism to Terrorism. Bill Russell, you have that look of, I would like to be next.
Well, listening to what you were saying earlier, it seems that in many ways this goes to the absolute heart of whether we can make democracy work. We take it for granted. We assume that, particularly in the American case, that we have perfected it, and therefore we can export it, and everybody has to do what we do. And yet the stories you tell, and this goes back all the way in American history. This is not new.
No, right, exactly.
This goes back to the colonial days.
Yes.
Well, the Alien Sedition Acts. This is a part of the history of this country, which we don't talk about. But
we keep it shrouded. Make it a point not to.
It wasn't in my history books much. I mean, there was a sentence on that. But these are serious challenges, and a lot of people will talk about the pendulum swings one way and it swings the other. That's a metaphor that may or may not be true. And the problem with the pendulum metaphor is it assumes that we can just sort of sit back and it'll swing back and everything will be fine and these excesses will go away. And it seems to me very dangerous to take that for granted.
Yes, and I'm so glad you said that, to remind people that this is not a new phenomenon in American life. We've gone through fears and repressions and anxieties in the past and demagoguery and the alien citizens. As you know, I write about it in the book here, and the Red Scare and the World War One, and the fears that is incited in the 30s, looking for communists under the bed, then Joe McCarthy, and now today, the same kind of. So you go through these processes. The problem is that we now have such a huge, voracious media that hammers at you around the clock, far greater than Joe McCarthy's era, where you can just spew these suspicious attacks on people and divide the country. And I think that's extremely dangerous. You know, as you will recall, I like in my books to have a thematic quote at the beginning that expresses what the theme of the book is. And I chose Mr. Lincoln, who's always quotable, something that he said, "Must a government of necessity be too strong for the liberties of his people or too weak to provide its own security?" And that test, that is the enduring challenge of democracy, as you said, from the beginning. There's nothing new about it. We have to have security to protect ourselves against enemies at home and abroad and domestic and terrible events in our democracy, but we also have to be wary and on guard not to abuse our liberties. And how you strike that balance, that's the real test of the democracy. Not only the political players, not the press, but the people. Do we understand it? Do we have a sense about it? It's hard. There's no easy answer to it. And it's a continuing dilemma of democracy. The challenge is, can democracy continue to work if you have this fear, hammering at us, dividing us, using us, culture wars, good Americans, bad Americans? That's what I'm concerned about.
We have a young friend who I regret to say poisons his mind every day with talk radio. Hate radio.
Yes.
Not just any talk
radio. It is hate radio, yes.
And he, every time that we get into a discussion, which is fairly often, more or less any time he sees me, he says, "Well, but everybody does it. And it's always been that way. And one side doesn't do it more than the other." And I insist that's not true. That's not ubiquitous. It isn't always the case that everybody is hateful toward everybody else. It doesn't have to be that way, does it?
They're not. And I have spent most of my journalistic career now, more years than you want to know. I mean, 40 or 45 years traveling around America. I think I have done this more than anybody in the news business. Because I want to know what people think. I never accept the idea there are two Americas. There are two Americas. There's poor, and there's, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about ideologically that I find in the Middle West and so forth, you go and sit with farmers at 4 o'clock in the morning. You sit in homes in Boone, Iowa, and have coffee. These people are not, they are not at all just riven with hatred and suspicion and so forth. But they're confused, however. And they hear a diet that continues to divide, and so they wonder. They don't know what the truth is. And therefore, they begin not to trust anything. what they read, what they hear, what their leaders are. And I think, if I'm right, Paula, I hope I'm right about this. I think the conditions that exist right now at this moment in American history, at this moment we're passing through, is an opening for a different kind of politics. People are so turned off by incompetence, deceit, corruption, lies, attacks, that you want someone who's authentic, real. And as I said earlier about Roosevelt, it tells you the truth and says it's not going to be easy. Here's what we're going to do. Mr. Bush never asked us for sacrifice in the almost five years. And that's not what leadership should do. You ought to prepare the people for what you think realistically they face. And it doesn't mean you're going to solve the problem, but at least you have laid out what you understand to be, and it's true.
It's also a lifetime experience, because there are people who have never heard genuine leadership. When Ronald Reagan came into power, he came in with that happy face, and everybody wanted that, enough people wanted that happy face. And so this isn't just today and 5 years. Again, you're looking back to the McCarthy era,
right,
and looking forward from that. So it is important to say it isn't just this guy. There is a flow to this that of which we must be wary.
And this manipulation of Reagan is a very good example. I wrote a book about Reagan a long time ago in the 80s and so forth, and he was exactly the right person at the right time. I didn't support Mr. Reagan or agree with many of his policies and so forth, but he did fit at a time in America when we were concerned, things were falling apart, the hostage takeovers in Iran, and 21% inflation rate, and oil, and so all these things were, and then corruption and so forth. And he was the happy face, and he would wave, that Johnny wave, you know, made you feel good. Morning again in America was a great theme. And they knew how to exploit and use, not just exploit, it was what America wanted to hear. Understandably, the best is yet to come. That's an element of leadership. Roosevelt had that. Ironically, Reagan's great hero at first was Franklin Roosevelt. Then in the White House, he put the portrait of Calvin Coolidge up instead of FDR. I've always thought that was kind of interesting.
It was actually very revealing, I think. You mentioned earlier the 24-hour news cycle. Ted Turner, we're in Atlanta. Ted Turner, you know, started CNN because he had this idea that if you had news available all day, every day, you could have a much better informed people, that you could cover stories that were not being covered, that you would go places, see things, and understand things. And he really thought he was making a major contribution to democracy.
Absolutely.
To the way we run our country.
Right.
And yet the absolute opposite has happened.
Yes, unfortunately, until the hurricane damage, Katrina, and the Gulf Coast, what you saw on cable and certainly on talk radio was celebrity attack, cheapness, and missing women, and as if that's the only story in the world. And not to deprecate the tragedy and horror of these things, but that's all you saw. You didn't know about the Islamic world. You didn't know about the sources of hatred that divide us. You didn't know about the reality of working inside Washington, how you're being used and so forth. You didn't know those things at all. But I do think that with the Katrina episode, for the first time, we seem to have refound our voice, raising criticisms, checking, and I think they did a great job. Cable did a great job. CNN did a great job. Even Fox did a great job on actually challenging the Bush administration. And I think it's not a matter of polemics. It's a matter of that's what you're supposed to do. You're not supposed to be a cheerleader. You're supposed to be a critic, informed, honest, fair, but a tough critic.
Interestingly, when you say you, I'm thinking he means the media. And
yes.
He means the American people.
Right.
That's also our role. And the press, the media, are there to do that for and with us, abrogated for a long time.
Yeah.
But again, that's not new either, because I'd be interested for you to talk about the comparisons between the press in the McCarthy era and the press before Katrina.
It was fascinating about looking back at Joe McCarthy. He had a genius, by the way. He was a bully. He was not an attractive man. He was cruel. Yes, he had charm, but he also was quite vicious physically, also could attack people, as he did. And I'm not making this up. That's who he was. But he also understood, as a pure demagogue would, how to use the elements of the media to reach over the heads of everything else and make charges. And in those days, it wasn't television. He started out when there were two radios in every home in America. Television sets had hardly any imprint in 1950 when he arose. And out of that came, finally, in the 4 or 5 years when television became the vehicle by which but he used the same technique always to make charges. And then if there were any follow-up reactions, commentary, they were lost because he'd make another charge and make another charge. It wouldn't have worked had he not been able to tap into the fear that did exist, fear of communism, fear of the bomb, fear of the nuclear holocaust. Einstein said we have approached a period where the civilization, it could be extinguished, incendiary, all that. So there was genuine fear.
Well, and there was still the fear coming out of the Second War when I remember my parents had friends from Asia and their neighbors would report them.
Yeah, sure.
So the fear that was still...
And you turned against your neighbor because they could be subversive or because their ideas were not or said to be dangerous or because they wrote something that seemed to be not American, not supportive of the government's position at that time. It's even more so now. You ask about the comparison. I am very hard on my business that I've worked and loved in for all these years in this book on the performance of the American press. Much more so even, and I'm surprised at this, even than in the McCarthy era. Because in the McCarthy era, while he was able to exploit and use it, there was a reaction. It was good reporting over the years that came up, and eventually it had a role. It was too late. There wasn't enough of it. But in this period, in the age of terrorism, the war with abroad in Iraq, there has been a quiescent, almost nothing. We didn't examine the rationale for the war. We accepted the lies of the administration on weapons of mass destruction and the whole purposes of the war. Now we know that those weren't true.
Well, and you use the magic word cheerleading, which is not the role of the media.
No,
let's do more of this when we return in a moment so I don't have to interrupt unduly. This is Haynes Johnson, Bill Russell and I, Paula Gordon. The three of us will be back in just a moment. Stay with us.